This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
If Florida State is doing national championships, ACC championships,
back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get more banged and bruised, work in a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success to either something I can really do this.
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast here on Seminole Sports Radio, a VSporto channel. I'm Jason Staples, your host. And today we're going to have a two-part podcast. First thing we're going to talk about, we're going to continue a little bit where we left off with the last one, talking about some changes that we're going to see in 2015 compared to 2014 and what Florida State fans have seen the last couple of years. Only this time we're going to do it on the defensive side. So that'll be our first segment. Our second segment, we're going to be talking a little bit about leadership. We're going to talk a little bit about leadership, and then we'll take a few I'll address a couple question and answers from some of our premium posters on NoleDigest.com to address some of the things, particularly about the defense. So let's go ahead and get into segment one, where we're going to talk a little bit about some of the changes in the defense. This is going to be kind of a short segment because the defense, by and large, is going to be similar. Fisher has some ideas. Jimbo Fisher has some ideas of what he wants in a defense. He knows what he wants. And he's one of those coaches who has gone out and tried to hire a staff that's going to put together a defense that is closest to the kind of defense that gives him trouble as an offensive coordinator. That's one of the basic schools of thought is, and I think one of the most successful schools of thought in college football is when a coach on one side of the ball gets hired as a head coach, those guys typically, or very often at least, not all of them do this, but very often you'll find those guys going and trying to find defensive coordinators that have given them trouble and then bringing people on staff, either those specific defensive coordinators or guys who run things that are similar to what those defensive coordinators run. And so Fisher knows what he wants to run. It's always going to have Saban roots. It's always going to have a lot of pattern matching and flexible personnel and different things that are Saban, Nick Saban, hallmarks. But we've also started to see, particularly you could see it in 2013 with some of the success that Florida State had there. We've seen Fisher kind of adjust a little bit of what he's looking for on defense based on the success that Florida State has had, and then some other things that were not as successful in 2014. And the biggest change, obviously, is on the coaching staff with Brad Lawing coming in for Sal Sunseri at the defensive end position. And you would think that potentially, losing one position coach on defense while maintaining the same defensive coordinator and all of this wouldn't result in major changes. But in this case, I actually think that's not exactly true. I think there are going to be some pretty significant differences, at least significant schematically, to those who know what to look for. It may not look as different to the naked eye, to the standard watcher, to someone who's just used to seeing Florida State out there. Formations and things will be similar for the most part. But it is going to be, I think, pretty significantly different what they're doing up front with Brad Lawing compared to what they did with Sal Sunseri. Like it or not, this has been a pretty collaborative defensive staff. Even going back to the Jeremy Pruitt year, they've worked together quite a bit. So Charles last year was not just Charles Kelly's defense. In fact, Sal Sunseri had a great deal to do with what they did defensively. And there were some things that I and some others, and some others more than even I, didn't really agree with that they did schematically and also in terms of where they put some personnel. And, just philosophically, some things that I'm not as big a fan of, but you could trace back, going back to Sunseri's time at Tennessee when he was actually the coordinator there, and see some similarities with what Florida State was doing, particularly with the defensive ends and linebackers, compared to what Sunseri was doing at Tennessee. You could see those parallels with what Florida State did last year. And I think a lot of those things are just going to disappear with Lawing taking over at that defensive end spot. And you're going to see a fundamentally more aggressive defensive front. I think that's the biggest difference. With Sunseri there, one of the things that FSU has, they did the last 2 years, and more last year than they did in 2014 and 2013, is having guys in two-point stances, standing up on the at those defensive end spots. Even your bigger guys, your Mario Edwards, your DeMarcus Walker, your guy, you know, these guys are, Edwards was three bills and Walker was 270 plus, almost 280 last year, in a two-point stance, catching blockers on that edge. And I'm not, you know, I'm not a big fan of that. I'm not a big fan of asking defensive players to catch blockers and then try to sort of neutralize them. And obviously, you know, that was mostly a two-gapping front with what they were trying to do. And the aim there is to use size, use girth, use length to some extent to try to minimize how many people you have to commit to stopping the run. The aim is to try to stop the run with six or seven. If they're in the spread, you stop it with five or six. If they're in a two-back, you try to stop it with seven so that you can keep that extra safety help back. So you're not taking as many risks in coverage. If you can stop the run with seven, then you can do quite a bit. And, you know, Mark Stoops did that too. He did differently with a different 4-3 look. Stoops followed more the old Butch Davis, you know, cover two kind of approach with that. But, you know, they did a lot of that in 2012. What they did with Sunseri, though, is a lot of reading, and there was a lot of complexity up front in what they were asking guys to do. They would two gap on one side and then one gap on the other. There were a lot of mixed fronts that they would run in the last couple of years, but particularly last year. And you'd see, you know, different guys dropping in coverage. Mario Edwards covering a tight end, or, you know, DeMarcus Walker, Chris Casher covering a tight end downfield, you know, in these zone blitz, these fire zone scenarios. This year, I think we're going to see some pretty significant differences. The first difference is just a matter of personnel. Instead of having Mario Edwards at three bills at that buck linebacker spot, and, you know, honestly, he did a better job with that than any 300-pounder any other 300-pounder I could imagine. But you generally don't want your 300-pound defense. You don't want a 300-pound, you know, strong-side defensive end as your buck linebacker. You're just not going to get what you're really hoping to get generally from the buck linebacker position. And what the buck is really it's a sort of defensive end, outside linebacker hybrid. And, you know, what Edwards was is he was a defensive end, defensive tackle hybrid playing that position. And then sometimes you'd have DeMarcus Walker at that position, or, you know, same kind of concept on the other side at times. And I never really felt like that was a great idea. And, you know, some of what they were asking those guys to do really didn't fit especially well into their skill set, but it fit into what Sunseri liked to do. And that's, you know, wound up being a little bit of a mismatch. And interestingly, in Media Day, the one time where the media had a chance to talk to Brad Line, he kind of threw Sal Sunseri under the bus a little bit, and, you know, sort of what they did on defense last year, under the bus a little bit, talking about how when he got to Tallahassee, the first thing he wanted to do is go back and look at what they did and, you know, take a look at personnel and look at tape. And he said, you know, we were asking some guys to do some things last year that they couldn't do very well. And the first thing that you need to do on defense is make sure that you're asking guys to do what they can do. And you don't ask guys to do what they don't do well. Which, by the way, if you remember, those of you who've read my stuff on Noel Digest for years, that was rule number one in my What's Wrong with the Defense series back in 2009. That good defensive coordination and good defensive scheme doesn't start with the chalkboard, doesn't start with the X's and O's. It starts with understanding what your personnel does well and what it doesn't. And when you have a Corey Mangum, going back to those years, in single coverage against, you know, a Clemson or a Miami slot who runs especially well, you're setting that kid up to fail. You can't ask that kind of guy to single cover those kinds of receivers. You can't just say, this is our scheme and we're just going to plug whoever wins that spot into that spot. You've got to actually find ways to use your personnel the best way they function. You can't ask them to do things they don't do well. And sometimes that means changing your own preferences on the defensive side in terms of what you do X's and O's, or in terms of who's where, or in terms of even what form, what, you know, fronts and things you run, you know, how much zone versus man, or what kinds, where you roll your safeties. You've got to know what your guys can do. And you ask them to do what they do well. And, you know, presumably, you know, ideally you have certain things that maybe certain guys don't do as well, but, and that you can hide those, you can limit those. But what you don't want to do is just have them doing it all the time. And I think last year's defense did at times have guys doing that. Now, that doesn't excuse the lack of effort and the lack of leadership and a number of other problems on last year's defense. But I do think that that's going to be something that will change this year just in terms of personnel. And that's specifically the Buck linebacker position is now Jacob Pugh's spot. He's about 245, 250 pounds. He is built to be a Buck. When he was coming out of high school, he to me looked like a prototypical Buck linebacker prospect, or Jack linebacker, whatever you want to call it. And we talked about that when he was signed, that he was signed as a linebacker, but it was like, yeah, he's probably going to be an edge guy, and that's right where he is. He's a guy that can contribute in both against the run and the pass in there because he's sturdy, he's long, and he's explosive. And the biggest thing is he can do a lot of things on the edge, and he can bend the edge a little bit in a way that Edwards, especially when he got overweight, partly because of some injury issues, we understand that, but some things that Edwards couldn't really do in terms of bending the edge. And that's even more true of Josh Sweat, of Lorenzo Featherston. Those guys, again, those guys can bend the edge, they've got length, and when you turn those guys loose in that edge roll, they can turn the corner. They can bend that edge. They can force the offense into some problems. And again, just to reiterate how remarkable it is that Josh Sweat is actually in a position to play and to contribute early after the knee injury he had as a senior. But just the personnel thing, that's going to change a little bit in terms of what they've got to work with on the edge. But the other thing that they're doing is Long is coming in, and up front, they're changing. I'm expecting to see a pretty different defensive front in terms of how they're scheming up front. I'm expecting to see a lot more one gap stuff. Basically, what the difference there is when you're two gapping, you've got a defensive lineman who's generally head up over an offensive lineman, and his job is to basically hold up that offensive lineman and try to march him back into the backfield head up. And while being responsible for the gap on either side of that offensive lineman. And then behind that two-gapping player, you allow the linebackers to scrape and flow to the football. So the linebacker doesn't just have one gap. He's got potentially several. And he's got to figure out, he's just going to read his keys, and he's going to scrape, and then he's going to attack wherever the back is coming. That's against the run. Against the pass, it works a little bit differently. But against the pass, the two-gapping stuff, you're not normally going to get a whole lot of pass rush out of it because you're basically just trying to push the offensive lineman back into the backfield. So you're not taking off and trying to shoot a gap at this point. Two-gapping teams typically need to bring somebody else, bring an extra blitzer to produce pressure. And that's the downside to two-gapping. The positive side to two-gapping is that, generally speaking, you can stop the run if you've got guys with mass. You know, Vince Wilfork, who can take two gaps, and maybe four, you can stop the run with fewer guys, which means that you're taking fewer risks in the secondary, and you can sometimes afford to send an extra player or two in the pass rush. The one-gap scheme is different, where you have typically guys lined up in the gap, but where they line up doesn't matter as much as where they end up. And each guy on the defensive front, whether it's linebackers or defensive linemen, is going to be responsible for one gap. And his job is to penetrate in that gap without getting trapped, but to penetrate in that gap, maintain his lane integrity, his gap integrity, and anything that comes into that gap he takes. So you're playing a little bit more downhill as a defensive line when you're playing in a one gap scheme. Now, FSU, like I said, has played some mixed fronts where, you know, one guy might be in a two gap or two guys might be in a two gap and then other guys are in one gap. But I think we're going to see more straight one gap stuff this year, first of all. And then when they do go hybrid, you're still going to see more one gap, more attacking front stuff. And really the thing to think about, it, for those of you who sort of want a visual or an impression of how this is actually going to work, Think about the difference between Florida's defenses under Will Muschamp and the Alabama defenses under Nick Saban. Saban's defenses tend to be more of that two-gap system, like what Florida State was doing last year, and just didn't really have the personnel to pull that off the way that they wanted, especially once Niall Lawrence Stample went down. Lawrence Stample could two-gap better than the guys that they had on the roster after that. And he's actually trimmed down, which tells you, I think, a little bit of where they're trying to go in terms of the defensive front. I think that we're gonna see this front moving, and this defense overall, moving to more of a Will Muschamp-style defense than a Nick Saban-style defense. And, you know, there are a lot of similarities. Listen, Muschamp did come from the Saban tree, but his defenses tend to be more aggressive, particularly up front, than what you have with Saban, and they play a little bit more robber. And I think we're going to see more robber coverage, which is what Mickey Andrews, by the way, ran as the base coverage for Florida State for years. I think we're going to see more robber coverage at Florida State than we have since Andrews was a coordinator. And one of the reasons you can do that is because you've got a lockdown corner on the short side. Your boundary corner with Ramsey is a lockdown guy. You don't have to commit much there, which means that the safety has a little bit more freedom when you can play that safety in the middle of the field in man-free or in cover three match, where, you know, it's a matchup zone effectively, where three guys have potential deep zone responsibilities, but they're matching up like it's man-to-man underneath. You've got a safety that doesn't have to worry as much about that short side, so you can be more flexible there. And then basically you dropping that extra safety down into the box a little bit more, or dropping him into the middle of the field to play robber. And what robber basically is you've got a guy who's not responsible for a specific zone. He's responsible for reading the quarterback's eyes and robbing wherever the quarterback goes with the football. The aim is for that robber to produce turnovers. And the guy that's ready made for that robber role in this defense is Nate Andrews. And, you know, some may think that I'm not the biggest Nate Andrews fan. Andrews was not a great center fielder. Andrews has some serious limitations when you're asking him to cover one-on-one against faster receivers, or to play with a lot of center field responsibilities where he's going to have to run sideline to sideline. But when it comes to playing in the box or playing a robber role or whatever, he's as good as anybody in the country. His ball skills, his ability to be a ball hawk, they're tremendous. So that, I think, is going to be the biggest difference from what we saw last year. They didn't play a whole lot of base robber. They had to blitz a ton last year because they couldn't get any pressure. And I think we'll see less blitzing and a lot more four-man rushes with the defensive line just let loose and getting upfield and being aggressive and trying to penetrate and letting those edge guys try to get into the backfield. And they've got some explosive edge guys to do it. Featherston and Pugh and Josh Sweat, and those guys can get into the backfield and they can create some havoc. And I think that's what they're basically going to allow to happen. And I think that, again, also frees up the linebackers to not do so much scraping and reading, not so much read and react, but that's in this gap, that's my gap, and I'm going to come up and meet it. So it allows guys to operate just a little quicker and a little bit more aggressively. And I think that's what we're going to see from this defense. And the aim is to produce a little bit more havoc than what they created last year. Now, you know, in terms of coverage stuff, that means that you're not blitzing quite as much. You can play it. You've got guys, you know, in their deep zones. You can play that safely, but you're really being aggressive on that defensive front. I think that's what we're going to see. Like I said, I think the watchword here is they're going more Muschamp, less Saban in terms of what they're doing defensively. And once again, this is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of eSporto Channel. This is Jason Staples, your host, as always. And we've been talking about some changes on the defensive side of the ball, but we're going to go ahead and flip over to our second segment now. We're going to talk a little bit about some leadership stuff, some things that I'd said earlier in the summer, but I want to reiterate now just about what this team really needs to do in order to be successful. It's a very, very young team, and this also has some impact in terms of talking about some of the issues that Florida State's had the last couple of years. For lack of a better way to say it, I think that this Florida State team, particularly this offseason, you could see over the last year or two the difference in the personality of the Florida State team compared to 2013. And I think in a lot of ways, like I said, for the lack of a better way to say it, this team has paid the price for Jameis Winston being the primary leader in 2014. You could see that in the summer. You could see that, you know, they're still trying to search out and develop the leadership. And, you know, hopefully if you're a Florida State fan, that leadership got developed a good bit over during camp. But let me explain what I mean by that. It's not that Jameis Winston is a bad human being. It's not that he's not a guy that you want on your team or as a team leader. But I do think that teams tend to take on the personality, the character of their primary leader or their primary leadership if you've got more than one leader. And you could see this going back into 2013. 2013, that team had the personality of LaMarcus Joyner and of Telvin Smith. Those guys were all business. They were highly intense. And they were not interested in fooling around off the field. They were not, work hard, play hard. They were just work hard, be businesslike, get in, do your job well, and do it intensely and get out. And if you were screwing around, LaMarcus would come knocking on your door, and he would be ready to pick a fight until you took care of business, until you started taking care of business. And there's a certain level of accountability that 2013 team had as a result of that leadership that I just don't think the 2014 team ever had. There was some youth there. Some of the guys that could have stepped forward and done that were either too young, or some of the older guys were just more interested in being in the NFL. And then the primary guy, the guy that was the leader, was Jameis Winston. And Winston, Fisher has said this before, that Winston was a terrific leader when he was around. He was a terrific leader on the field. He was a guy that everybody could be confident in on the field. He was a guy that demanded excellence on the field. But he was a two-sport guy. So he wasn't always with football, particularly in the offseason. He wasn't around those guys to hold them accountable off the field. Secondly, as we all know, he wasn't necessarily all the most accountable guy off the field anyway. He was a work hard, play hard guy, and you could see that in the personality of the 2014 team. The 2014 team was a work hard, play hard team, and they played hard quite a bit, just in terms of how they approached things on the field. You could see that they were ready to flip the switch. And this is actually one of the things that's going to be interesting about Winston in the NFL. I'm curious to see how he does in the week-in, week-out slog. Because he's not a guy that stays interested as much as he gets challenged and then responds to a challenge. He plays angry very, very well. He focuses really well when he's angry. And you could see that, you know, going back to the Florida game in 2014... The Florida State offense struggled all game except for the two drives immediately following Jameis getting punched in the face on the Florida sideline. He got punched in the face on the Florida sideline and immediately just flipped the switch, and FSU scored on two drives after Winston was perfect. Two drives in a row, then halftime, and then everything was out of sync again. That was a lot of the personality of the 2014 team. The interesting thing that I'm interested, the thing that I'm interested to see about the 2015 season is what kind of leadership the 2015 team is going to have. Are they going to have that kind of LaMarcus Joyner, Telvin Smith accountability where they're going to be all business and they're going to do the things that, that you expect? Not only the things that you expect, but that they're going to come in and be, so focused from day one, from Monday through Sunday, Monday through Saturday. You know, it's not just the focus on the field on Saturdays that matters. It's focus Monday through Friday in the week preparation. Are they going to have that kind of focus, not just the energy, but the focus and the discipline that you saw in 2013? If so, this team could be really, really good. I've not gotten any indication so far that they have that kind of focus, that they have that kind of leadership. And that's not surprising given how young they are. That 2013 team had the luxury of those seniors that could step forward and do that, that had been through quite a bit and could make those demands of their younger teammates. Now, the question is whether they start to develop that kind of leadership for 2016 in 2015, or if that already starts to develop by mid-year or whatever in the 2015 season, and then you could potentially see this team get really good. the side benefit to that is when you have that kind of leadership and accountability on your team, that's the culture stuff that Jimbo Fisher talks about in terms of getting through to your team so that they behave, they do their job on and off the field, so that you don't get some of the problems that Florida State had off the field when with all the guys in the club, all the guys, you know, doing certain things that have cast Florida State into even further public attention. You know, when you have team leadership and you have those guys saying, no, guys, let's stay home. Let's go play video games instead of going out, or let's do whatever. Those guys actually, and holding guys accountable not to go out and do stuff stupid or do stupid stuff, that makes a big difference. And it actually does carry over to the on-field stuff. This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of eSporto Channel, and we're going to do a quick bonus segment. I asked for questions from our Noel Digest subscribers, our premium subscribers. I'm going to address one of them here because it does pertain to the defensive theme of the prior of part one of this podcast. I'll probably address it just briefly on the next podcast, which will be the question and answer podcast, the final one before the start of the season. But the question basically was this: given the makeup of the defense, what percentages would you put on us being in our base defense versus nickel dime, and what does that mean for our run defense? So the first thing I would say is that the base defense at Florida State at this point is a base nickel. We're going to see Florida State in the base nickel more often than not. They're going to be in five defensive backs as their base. So I'm going to say probably 70% of the time we're going to see the base defense in the base nickel, just because of the kinds of offenses that you see in college football these days. That's just what you're going to see. And also because the best personnel on this team is by and large in the secondary. They've got seven defensive backs they feel like they can go to war with and win. So we're going to see the base defense as the nickel defense. So then the next question is, how much dime are we going to see? And I think we're going to see more dime this year than what we've seen in the past, partly because Reggie Northrop was not a good coverage linebacker before his knee injury, and now he's got that knee injury. So when you're in coverage situations, you don't want to ask that guy to do what he doesn't do well. So what you do is you slide Nate